Hey there. Thank you so much for joining us for the Big Time Talker podcast. We're everywhere now. Spotify, Apple, iTunes, iHeartMedia, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, you should be able to find us there. New episodes every Tuesday. And the show is made possible by our friends at SpeakerMatch.com. They are the world's largest online virtual speakers bureau. If you are a meeting planner, or maybe you're a platform speaker, you can find one another at the virtual marketplace there at SpeakerMatch.com. And big-time talkers like to talk to big-time personalities. This week, it's a big-time filmmaker. He's a documentary filmmaker. The new movie is fantastic. I had a chance to check it out. It's called South Beach Shark Club. Robert Ramos joins us today. Robert, what a fun film.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Burke. Appreciate it, man.
So this is a documentary, and it's about a lot of different things, and I took a lot of different messages away from it. But first of all, it's a joy to watch. When people meet you and they say, hey, what is your movie about? What say you?
Well, typically I start with kind of like a comparable, which is Dogtown and Z-Boys. It's kind of like a history of this counterculture in the 1970s in Miami Beach. It revolved around the beach, around the pier, around like these young kids, most of them like Cuban immigrants that kind of just slept on the beach and were like the first wave of young people to grow up there at that time where so much was changing. And, you know, they were fishing, surfing, and kind of just being beach bums. They didn't really see a future for themselves at that time. So it's kind of like this kind of gave them some structure in how they navigated that landscape of Miami Beach in the 70s throughout the 80s, 90s. And they found that within like the shark fishing community of all things, very bizarre, you know, a story that is, you know, very unique to South Florida. It's like the version of Dogtown and Z-Boys of South Florida. You know, there's no good surf and there's not consistent good surf in South Florida and there's no downhill. So you don't have like, you know, that surf and skate scene was not thriving. A lot of people went to California chasing that. And these are kind of the guys who stuck around and they built this little community that's very bizarre. And I think, you know, people would be really interested to hear about it and see some of like the uniqueness of it as it pertains to this small community of people in South Florida.
The movie is out and it's being screened around the country. Robert Ramos is our guest, and he put this really unique documentary together about unique individuals in Miami Beach. And, you know, for folks from around the country that may not have been there, Miami Beach is very much thought of as what you see on TV. You might think, you know, Miami Vice, you might think old school Fontainebleau Hotel and Frank Sinatra, but there is this undercurrent of really interesting cats. And there was a time in the 1970s where a big part of that area, I guess, was not sort of the upscale lifestyles of the rich and famous kind of place that we all think of it as.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, at that time, Miami Beach had kind of become like downtrodden. It was not a very appealing place to be or live at that time. The heyday with Jackie Gleason and the Fontainebleau and the Rat Pack, that had already passed, you know, a couple hurricanes, tourism just kind of shifted to other destinations like Orlando, the Bahamas, Caribbean, things like that. And then you start having this influx of, you know, people retiring from the Northeast and all these old people who didn't have a lot of money that could find affordable housing on the beach, on Ocean Drive of all places. Right now, Ocean Drive is like, you know, the Bourbon Street of Miami Beach. It's crazy. It's just partying and stuff. Back then it was, you know, old hotels that were converted into studio apartments for, you know, retirees. And then you just have this, you know, small group of, you know, young kids there. I think in the movie, it says that per square footage or per the size of the island that is Miami Beach, it was like the oldest population in the world. So it had not become a very appealing place to live or it could have been very bizarre as like a young person growing up there. So as you might imagine, you've seen the film, this is, you know, just something that's very peculiar and
you had a really rough group of people that moved in with all the retirees and senior citizens as well.
Yeah. And initially it seems like, you know, it was a little more fun and like lighthearted, and like over time there's like all this kind of rough around the edges stuff that was going on. You know, there was the Mariel Boatlift where, you know, Fidel Castro opened the prisons in Cuba, and there was a lot of kind of like the Scarface era in Miami Beach. And then also in the 90s, there's a lot of drug trafficking in the early 90s as well, and gangs and all kinds of stuff that, you know, it's kind of swept under the rug by the people trying to promote the tourism down there. But it's kind of like, you know, we have the view of that through the eyes of these shark fishermen and these locals that, you know, grew up there in the 70s when it was a little more peaceful and kind of surfy and fishing town. And, you know, you get to see the evolution of the city through their eyes in the movie.
The movie is South Beach Shark Club. Robert Ramos is the director and filmmaker behind this thing. And you talk about some of those colorful characters that populate this film. You have those guys, and you also have this treasure trove of great archival footage from back in the day of, TV stories that were done about these guys who were shark fishing off the piers and off the bridges there. And I was curious, as I watched the movie, how you were able to get your hands on this old footage from back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, that old footage made it possible to make the movie. So this was a story that I was told, and that, you know, I don't want to say I lived it entirely, but I did see a lot of it with my uncles and my father. They were personally involved with that whole little fishing scene down there south of Fifth Street in Miami Beach. And so, when I started diving into the archives, I found, you know, some of these videos that were specific to some of the people involved in this. And so that made it all possible to start dreaming about it and actually start pursuing this as a feature length film. You know, initially it was a short film. So, you know, we just scratched the surface with the archival and we made a short film. It had a lot of success. It actually was on PBS, and, you know, it enabled us to create a feature length version of it. But little by little, I mean, over 6 years, we're unearthing archival footage from everywhere. One of the main sources was the Wolfsonian Archives in Miami-Dade College, actually oversees the archives. It's just a treasure trove of footage of South Florida and Miami Beach from, I mean, as far back as the 40s and maybe even before that, but a lot of good stuff in the 70s that you see in the movie, and a lot of things that are just very peculiar and that most people probably have never seen before.
That's what I like the most about this movie, Robert, is that it's sort of this time and place with this wild stew of, you've got, you know, the big South Florida Jewish population. You got these mm-hmm. Cuban immigrants are in that stew. You got the skate punks. You've got these shark fishermen who are young guys, and, you know, they're going after these massive sharks. Of course, everybody talks about Shark Week now on Discovery. This is that kind of footage too. So it's just, it's a really unique take of that region. Are you from there? You said you have family connections of people, I guess, who are characters in the film, but I don't know how you got interested in the whole story.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Miami Beach, which in itself is very unique in itself too. I mean, Miami Beach is a strange place to grow up as a kid in the 90s, which is when I grew up down there. So these were stories that were handed down to me, kind of. And so I kind of looked at it like, even the actual nature of the film, the making of the film, is kind of like from the perspective of a kid being told these stories, and how, you know, kind of romanticizing this life of sleeping on the beach and just waiting for the hit, and, you know, and nothing else. Like, really, these guys were, you know, just trying to outdo each other and, you know, spend most of their days just, you know, trying to catch fish and sharks and hanging out, being beach bums, most of them.
Well, yeah, beach bums, and beach bums with a purpose, right? Like, there's a guy that you feature in the film. I think the character's name is Jimbo, and he's still out there today. He's like 70, but he's taken it upon himself to mentor all these kids from troubled homes and kind of give them this purpose of shark fishing and give them a place to go. And what a unique character that guy is.
Yeah, totally. His philosophy on life is it's extremely intriguing. And I spent a lot of time with Jimbo actually sleeping on the bridges, which was, like, you know, process of making this film. We just, you know, we hung out with Jimbo all the time. But yeah, he represents a different mindset from one of the other main characters, which is Renee. You know, Renee's self-obsessed. He is like just a complete freak for sharks. Like all at one point, all he cared about was just catching the biggest shark he could. So there's a story from obsession. And then alternatively, there's a story of Jimbo, who is very selfless and takes it upon himself to take in these kids and teach them a skill, you know, someone who might not see a way out of a certain situation. Kids that are quite literally off the street or were in gangs or mixed up with drugs or the wrong people. And Jimbo, you know, takes them under his wing and teaches them a skill and something that teaches you patience, discipline. And it's very cool. I mean, the Jimbo story, we love Jimbo. Jimbo's like, I feel like he's family after making this thing. So
you got to see him in this movie. It's a documentary, South Beach Shark Club. And not just any documentary. I mean, this thing is being screened at the most important doc film festival in America, Doc NYC. So congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, thanks, Burke. We appreciate it, man. Yeah, we're really excited to be here at Doc NYC, biggest documentary festival in the country. I can tell you that much. One of the biggest in the world. And yeah, we're really excited to show the film here. We're staying with some friends right now in Brooklyn. And I don't know if you guys could hear, but there's a child in here. He's running around screaming. I don't know what's going on, but you know, it's really fun. We're excited to be here. We're mobilizing our little South Florida community up here and others who are, you know, first time viewers and people who might be interested in hearing about this very unique subculture that they've probably never been exposed to, especially when they're thinking of Miami Beach and you know, what it's been portrayed like in the media the last 30 years, probably.
Completely different. Years. And that's one of the great things about the movie. It gives you a sort of a peek behind the curtain. It's like the Wizard of Oz in that way, you know. When you went to Jimbo, who's one of the main characters in the documentary, and some of these other guys, you know, who were talking about things that happened to them in the 70s, the 80s, and you said, "Hey, man, I want to make a movie about you and your shark fishing." What is their reaction? What do they say to you? Get out of here. I mean, I can't even imagine that, having seen this documentary, what this guy Jimbo, who's sort of this Rastafarian, you know, Zen like guy, what does he say to you?
That's a great question, man. And it was really, it was tough, man. Like, you know, to get everyone's trust and, you know, these aren't guys that you could really just approach off the street, really. Like it is kind of like a gang. It's a club, you know, quote unquote. So, and Jimbo, the people get worried sometimes being portrayed on film like that. So we had to gain their trust, and it happened through, you know, when we were shooting the short film, I just cut up really quickly. We did one day of, actually, I think this was before we did any shooting. I cut up like a little 2-3 minute trailer with some like Led Zeppelin and like some Buffalo Springfield and all these like cool bands from back in the day that I knew they liked. And I just cut up this, little fast-paced trailer for them with all the shark fishing and archival footage, and they were so excited, and they realized that was, you know, gonna do them justice. And I just wanted to portray them as they are, man, you know. And so that once they realized that, they really opened up, and Jimbo let us follow them around, and we would spend, you know, upwards of 3 days on a bridge with Jimbo hanging out in a thunderstorm underneath a tarp, you know, not even being able to film, you know, listening to music and hanging out with a very small, dedicated crew. Also, shout out to them because, you know, it would not be possible without them. And they really roughed it out for us. So
that's the glamour of show business they don't tell you about in filmmaking school, right?
Exactly, man. But so, yeah, what a cool time.
One of the things that I learned in this movie, and I learned a lot and was entertained while I was learning, which is the best thing, right, is I learned that with the shark fishermen, one of the ways that they chum the waters for the shark is they send people out on surfboards lying on top of bloody bait. That's crazy to me. Talk. Just coming out of my mouth, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, that's hilarious, man. The way it's...
And you have footage of this. You actually have film of this happening. This is not anything made up for the movie.
No, it's not. Well, yeah, back in the day, before people were using kayaks, they pretty much used whatever they could get their hands on. They used inflatable boats, aluminum boats, and a lot of times surfboards, since the surfing community had an overlap with the fishing community. A lot of times the people who would surf were fishermen, were skateboarders, were divers. And so they'd use these surfboards you know, they'd go out in the daytime, go spear fishing, spear a bunch of barracudas or big jack crevel. Those are fish native to South Florida, you know, or bonitas. Sometimes walk the fishing docks and buy, like, you know, the fish that were not, like, you know, table suitable for, like, table food. And they'd use it, you know, for the shark bait. So they'd bring it back to the pier, cut it in half usually, because you do want some blood in the water when you're fishing for sharks, as you might imagine. And they cut it in half, hook it onto a line, and paddle it out into the surf. And so these guys would be paddling it out, 200 yards. And the guy on the shore would be waving, nah, go further, go further. And so if you went further and you did what the guy on the shore told you to do, then you would have, like, a better chance of kind of, like, letting these guys, you know, mentor you and hang out with you. They're like, oh, this guy's good. And they'd call it they had, like, nicknames for everything. In the movie, it talks about it, you know, they call them Genos. Because I guess there's a pizza place down the street called Gino's. And so
they just give them a number, right? You're Gino number four. You're Gino number 17.
Yeah. So they used it as, like, a hierarchy system to kind of rank them and, like, kind of incentivize them to paddle out these bloody baits further into the surf and bigger baits. And, like, you know, that's what it was all about. So, yeah, it is true. They did paddle them out like that. They weren't necessarily chumming the water with it. It's just kind of like a situational. They just happen to be chumming the water because there is a bunch of blood all over the bait. But the whole goal was just to get that line out there real far into the surf, past the surf and into the current, so that they could have a good shot at getting the biggest shark they could.
A lot of these guys are not like Jimbo, though. You know, Jimbo, as I said, he sort of has this zen-like quality. He's like a blue-collar Jesus Christ figure, right? But the other guys, I mean, these are pretty rough guys coming up, and now they're in their 40s and their 50s, some of them, and you talk to them. Were there any of them that you as a filmmaker were afraid to approach, that you were reticent to talk to? What were they kind of like it as grown guys?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Miami and Miami Beach, I've met a lot of different characters, so it's not that different from some of the people I've met growing up. I went to public school and high school. And so some of these characters have been, around. I've been around them before. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely some edgy characters, and definitely some people who were mixed up in the wrong crowds that, you know, since then have found a way out of it. And mostly through the fishing community.
Did when you were doing this movie, and the movie, by the way, South Beach Shark Club, incredible documentary, screening at Doc NYC, and that's where the filmmaker Robert Ramos is right now to screen that film. When you were filming this thing, did you or your crew actually see any of the guys latch onto a shark? Did any of that happen while you were there?
Well, yeah, they did. They caught some sharks. And all the sharks that were caught on film were released safely and swam off. And we brought them in very quickly. It was really cool. I mean, these guys kind of have changed their tune since back in the day. So nobody got bitten by a shark or anything like that, if that's what you're asking. But there were some situations that, I mean, these guys are like walking sharks back into the water, like, you know, two guys holding a shark, making sure it swims back out and, you know, revive the fish and make sure it gets on its way. So there was definitely some interesting and sketchy times while we were making this.
That's cool, though, that you got to actually see it happen. And these are not tiny little sharks that you show in the film, right?
No, they're not. A lot of times we were in the water trying to help them. Some of the crew had to, expand their roles on this film set. So it very certainly something different from most documentaries. It required a different and maybe a new learning skill set there, learning how to release sharks back into the ocean safely.
When you guys opened this movie at the Miami International Film Festival, I bet people lost their minds. They must have thought it was the greatest thing ever.
It's pretty surreal being here right now and in New York for Doc NYC, and it was very surreal showing it in Miami, in our hometown. We sold out the theater on the first day. They had to open a second theater, and people were hooting and hollering, and the eclectic crowd of biker guys and skateboarding dudes that are, you know, from back in the day, they're now, you know, in their 50s and 60s, and, you know, then their kids and different families who their uncle was involved with this. And I mean, it was just like just a bunch of a very wide, broad audience of misfits and just Miami to the bone people who were there and populating that audience, and they were going crazy, man. I mean, at sometimes you couldn't even hear the movies.
I love it. It's got to be a thing for those guys to see themselves on the big screen and see their story told after all these years. Hey, you mentioned something that I wanted to ask you about before we move past it. You talked about how they do it completely differently now. So as I saw in the movie, you know, back in the day, these guys who were shark fishermen, young guys, you know, they would reel them in and cut them up. Now it's a catch and release thing, right?
Yeah, it's right now it's all catch and release. Back then there were no regulations on shark fishing, and you know, it's touched upon in the movie, but they kind of saw it as like a way out. Like they would, you know, they would sell the sharks. Actually, they had some kind of value. They'd use them for like for bait for crab traps. So they sell them to crab and lobster fishermen. They actually turn them into all kinds of different to different markets and things like that. Actually, for food as well. But nowadays, it's all catch and release. They're very, you know, careful to make sure that they can like keep their sport alive. And so there's like this big movement for, you know, the FWC, Florida Fish and Wildlife, working with the shark fishermen to make sure the regulations are, you know, upheld, and they're using the best practices in their fishing these days.
You know, if you go to Florida on vacation in South Florida and you see these guys on a bridge somewhere who are fishing or on a pier, now the backstory has been made into a movie, and it's an amazing backstory. South Beach Shark Club, Robert Ramos, the filmmaker, joins us on the Big Time Talker podcast to talk about this new movie. Let me ask you about the craft. How did you get into filmmaking?
So yeah, I've been making, you know, when I was a kid, you hear these stories, you know, your parents have like a handheld camera and you kind of just hang out around the house and make sketches and stuff. I was a big SNL fan when I was a kid, so we used to do a bunch of sketch comedy. I've been to writing and narrative filmmaking since high school, you know, worked in the school news, you know, doing mostly editing back then. And then, went to California to go to film school, mostly for like my theory classes. So I was like taking like classes on Alfred Hitchcock and Stanley Kubrick. And I was at Santa Monica College down in LA, and then came back to Miami and kind of got disillusioned with the whole filmmaking and being an artist thing. I was a musician as well, and I started working on boats. So I actually became a diver. I used to do diving for aquaculture. So I would grow.
What is that? I'm sorry. What is that?
Yeah. Aquaculture is like, there's different kinds of aquaculture. So some could be fish farming. What we were doing specifically was growing live rock for fish tanks. Okay. So okay. For saltwater aquariums. And so I got involved with that, and I worked my way up to becoming the captain of the boat. And from there, I had a fishing charter business. I mean, I used to do luxury charters. I've driven boats in movies. I drove a cigarette speedboat in some movies in Miami. And then kind of got, you know, at some point I was just like, I think it's time to go back into the film thing. I actually have a story to tell. You know, I traveled to the Med. I traveled all over the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Bahamas. And so like, by the time I decided to go back to film school, I felt like I had a story to tell again, and just jumped right back into it. And at some point I just realized that I was only in narrative filmmaking at the time. And I just realized that if I don't tell this story about South Beach Shark Club and this history of Miami Beach, that it would probably be gone forever. So let me get these guys while they're still around, and, you know, get them in front of a camera, cue people in on the Miami Beach that they never knew existed. One of the true identities of Miami Beach that's kind of lost. So
completely lost. And that's, again, one of my favorite parts of this movie, South Beach Shark Club, screened at the 2022 Miami International Film Festival. People went nuts. Now it's screening in New York City. What's next for you?
Well, we're working on a couple narrative projects, actually. So my writing partner and I are writing a miniseries that's kind of like a Yellowstone meets White Lotus. It's a Miami-centric narrative series, and it's about all the political shenanigans down there and a lot of the wacky characters down in the Keys and that sort of thing, you know, in the style of it's kind of like some of like the Carl Heiss and noirs and some of the Billy Corbin stories that you hear about.
Nice.
He's another director down in Miami Beach. But yeah, so we're working on that at the moment.
Do you, with South Beach Shark Club, do you visualize this documentary? You said that the short film was on PBS. Do you visualize this someday on a streaming platform? How will people around the country be able to see this movie in your ideal world? And I know sometimes that's kind of out of the filmmaker's control, but if you could wave a magic Robert wand, what would you want this movie to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the subject matter is really interesting. And I think it, although it is niche, I think that a lot of people would be surprised to learn and see and witness some of this this counterculture of Miami Beach. And I really hope that we get on a major streaming platform. That would be great. So right now, you know, we're talking to distributors and hoping that, you know, we can get this on a major, just a major platform, Hulu, Netflix, HBO, call me.
Make it happen. If you're listening right now, pay attention. The movie is beautifully shot. Of course, the scenery can't be beat in South Florida. You capture it really well. And it's great how you sort of juxtapose that beautiful scenery with the grittiness of the people and some of the locations that you show as well. Hey, I want to ask you one more question about a story that you brought out in the film. And that is the story of one of your main characters and his encounter. His name is Rene, his encounter with a great white and a capsized boat. So tell me about how you found out about that story and maybe give us the Cliff Notes version of that story.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. The first time I heard that story, it's like, you mean like you're, I was like, you mean you're just talking about Jaws? Like that never really happened. And they're like, well, I mean, he says it happened. And, you know, a lot of, it's like everyone on the boat said it happened. And there were these articles that were written in. Allegedly, there's footage of them getting rescued. And, you know, so we just went down that rabbit hole and, you know, little by little started unearthing some of this stuff. But yeah, basically this guy gets so obsessed with shark fishing. I would say, you know, one of the main characters, Rene de Dios. And yeah, he goes out on a very small boat, a 20-foot boat out to the Bahamas to set the record for the biggest shark ever caught on rod and reel. They actually arrived in Bimini, which is like the border town of the Bahamas. And they yep. immediately went to the marina office and they said, we need the paperwork for the International Game Fishing Association for the world record, like to like fill out the paperwork. They're like, look, just bring us the fish and then you could have the paperwork. And they laughed them out of the office. You know, it so happens that they went out that night and they did hook a massive great white shark that they fought for 14 hours on a boat into the night. And they had some problems, I guess, mechanical issues. I mean, this was not, let's say, it was not a nice boat, let's just say.
Yeah, and not a large boat either. It was not a big boat.
No, it was a rinky-dinky boat. Most of the time, that's what these guys had. We're not talking about, like, you know, the kind of boats you see running around Miami these days in the bay. But so they had some mechanical issues. The captain went to sleep, and when the angler woke him up, when Rene woke him up, he was like, hey, I got a little water in the boat. And the captain was like, what do you mean water in my boat? He opened up the hatch below deck, and the bilge pumps weren't working. The whole boat was filled with water. Allegedly, from what the captain says, Rene tried to bring in the shark. He locked the line, and that pressure from the shark and with all the water in the back of the boat, it flipped the boat and they capsized it. So from there, they were out at sea for 2.5 days, you know, just clinging on to life. Rene was diabetic too, actually. So he was like quite literally dying out there. And it's just a fascinating story. It's Jaws, essentially. It's a real life Jaws.
An amazing story. And just one of the ones that you'll hear and see in South Beach Shark Club. The new documentary from Robert Ramos, hopefully on a streaming platform near you soon. In the meantime, is there a website that folks can go and take a look and get trailers and footage on the movie?
Sure, absolutely. It's southbeachsharkclub.com. There's a bunch of media there. You can also follow us on Instagram at South Beach Shark Club and on TikTok for the kiddies, South Beach Shark Club as well. So there's a ton of media on it, and you're going to see some stuff that you never seen before in a Miami beach that's kind of been forgotten and now, you know, brought up to the surface by our film. And yeah, hope you guys enjoyed and please check that out.
Brought up to the surface. I see what you did there. Good yeah. Oceanic reference. That's my new friend Robert Ramos, and the movie, I cannot recommend it more highly, South Beach Shark Club. Check it out, and thank you for checking us out on the Big Time Talker podcast today. Wherever you go, whatever you do, make it a great day. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Speaker Match, for sponsoring the show. And thank you, Robert, for being on the program.
Oh, thank you, Burke. You rock, man. Cheers.